Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Carolyn Yeager, coming to you tonight on June 20th. Well, it's not night for everyone, but it's close to evening anyway. Last night, I talked about moving forward. My program tonight continues with that theme by bringing out how we may have become infected with egalitarianism. I'm asking the question, are all Europeans created equal? This may be an unwelcome question to some, but if we don't believe in equality, we should apply that to ourselves also. Egalitarianism infects everything, everywhere. What we need to understand is that everyone matters, but not everyone is equal. This goes for groups and even nations, as well as individuals. Saying every individual or every nation is not equal doesn't mean disapproval or disrespect. It only means we pay attention to the differences instead of trying to deny them or pretending to ignore them. We all have to grow a tougher skin if we're going to survive and pass on our genetic heritage. I really do believe that. I think we, instead of becoming kinder, more tolerant, more understanding, I think we need to really get tougher, and we need to be tougher with our so-called enemies. We need to be tougher with those who are really trying to destroy us if we're going to get anywhere. If we're too sensitive to slights or what have you, we're probably too sensitive to survive. You know, it's the young and brash people who generally win the battles over the kind and genteel people. And I think in terms of young races, too, there are young and brash races that make the white race often look like it's worn out and doesn't have anything, any spirit left in it. So this does not apply to everyone, but I'm just asking these questions. And I don't think that we're over the hill. I don't think that we're finished. I think we've been somewhat brainwashed. And my point here tonight is that we may be more brainwashed than we admit. I think this is the case this is often the case, that we're all affected by our environment. And we've all been living in this egalitarian society belief system. And we can be more affected by it than we think, and it shows when we are offended by things because of our egalitarian spirit, that I don't know quite how to put this, but you know, if we're too offended by things, and then we can't talk things out strongly and directly, we're afraid to. Well, of course, a lot of people are afraid of the laws in their nations and the prison sentences that they might get, or the fines, because they are in Europe. So that, you know, it's not always easy to determine. You know, sometimes that's the reason. And we have to remember that they have to be more careful than somebody like me, who can just speak out and say whatever I feel like, and I'm not at all concerned about it. Now, the Nazis as a group had this down really well, to be more young and brash. They were very, very spirited. They were very enthusiastic. They had this quality of youth in their ideas. They were revolutionary and enthusiastic. Yet today, the Nazis are attacked or shunned by those who call themselves white nationalists, who don't want the Nazi taint that's been put by society on it to rub off on them. But I'm not talking about Nazis tonight. Following up on my concern about the words we agree to use, like in the recent past, I've talked about the word Holocaust, which I think is a totally wrong word, and we should try to train ourselves not to use it. Racism, which is another word, we should not accept that racism is a bad thing and go along with all that talk that we hear everywhere about racism. It's so easy to do. And anti-Semitism, which is not quite as important as the other two, because I don't see anything wrong with anti-Semitism in the general sense. And so we shouldn't, with anti-Semitism, I believe we shouldn't be denying it. We shouldn't be saying, oh, I'm not anti-Semite, because we think that it's wrong to, it means that we're against every person in that group. Regardless, we're against Jews as a collective group, and we would never want to be thought of as that way. And yet most of us do see something wrong, not with so much with individuals, but we see something wrong with that Jewish manner or that Jewish thinking or that Jewish group, that and we should be able to admit it, and we should say so instead of, again, hiding from that. So I'm carrying on tonight with that, in that vein, but with concepts rather than the word, and the concept of egalitarianism, which we might be agreeing to use or to agree with, even if we don't accept it as valid in our own thinking, so our talking among ourselves. So I'm going to use the problems that are in the news today with Greece as my example of this, because I've paid some attention to what's happening with the so-called Greece default and the disturbances and riots and so on in Greece, and the various commentaries that have been put out there. And while that is not, I've never talked about, I'm not economics, and I'm not really going to try to talk about economics. I'm going to approach it from a little bit different angle. But I'll just jump into it here and make some points that, you know, Greece is a member of the European Union. And believe me, I don't mean to be attacking Greece. I hope people can understand that. I like Greeks, and I know of a few Greeks. I don't actually have any friends that are Greeks that I know of, but my friends have gotten to be my, well, I guess so many of my friends are internet friends now that I do know some people on the internet. But I know there's this great Greek fellow, and I don't know really exactly what his last name is, Papa something, who works at American Free Press and for the Barnes Review. And he's done great work. He writes great articles, and he's also brought some other nationalists, Greek articles by Greek nationalists. And, you know, the Greeks are, a lot of the Greeks are terrific people. But we always have to, we're talking about it here as a whole. And when we talk of it as a whole, while they may, groups may be terrific in some areas, they're not so terrific in others. So, giving that kind of making that little, excuse to begin with, so I'm not thought to be attacking the Greeks here. Let me say that, Greece, as I was saying, is a member of the EU. But Greeks are not showing themselves to be responsible with money. This is what we read in the news today. Many, like so many southern climate people, they get hold of money. They spend it without worrying too much about running out of it, thinking there must be more where that came from or something like that. This is a kind of a trait of certain people more often living in the south and in the north, and we know the reasons for that, how that evolved. But with loans from the European Union, the Greeks did enjoy high salaries, short work weeks, and long vacations. That's how they used it. I mean, this is being said that they didn't use it the way they were supposed to be using it. And then they started to go broke because they're not creating the wealth themselves with the money that they were given. The whole idea in the European Union is that each nation is going to be helped by the others, but it's going to be creating wealth for the whole. But the Greeks were not actually doing that, and so now they're in the fix that they're in. Now, the opposite of Greece, you might say, are the Germans, because they really are quite the opposite of that, and they are the most solvent nation in the European Union. They are famous for saving and delaying gratification. This, while is somewhat is respected, it's not really a trait that most people love, because they're not as much fun as people like the Greeks, but they are really nice to have around when you're in need and you need to go and get some help from somebody. Now, the Germans are also known to be hardworking, very capable, and they are creators of wealth. They're always creating wealth, and they, no matter how many times they've been tremendously destroyed, and yet they come back as a wealthy nation. And the Germans are creditors rather than borrowers. And the Greeks tend to be borrowers rather than creditors. So here you've got two European nations in the European Union that are really quite different. But they're both European, right? That's what we say. As Europeans, they're part of a united superstate, Europe. They have the same rights, benefits, and responsibilities. But no, the Greeks are not as responsible as the Germans are. They don't do as they promised to do when they signed on for the benefits. They took the benefits but forgot about the responsibilities, it seems. But this became apparent long ago already. And this is not something that was just discovered. But what was done about it? Was anything done about it by the European Union? Not really. Because the dignity of the Greeks, this is what I say possibly, the dignity of the Greeks, who were fellow Europeans, should not be affronted. Or maybe it had more other causes. But it's like, well, we want all these people in our union. We want a large European Union. And therefore, we need to train. We need to help the weaker ones or the slower ones to catch on. And they will. That's the idea. Because we can all do the same. So what was done to extend them more money in the form of loans, that's what was done. What was done was to extend them more money in the form of loans to gain time and to, quote, straighten out their problems, unquote. Now, they did, we did the former. We extended more money. I mean, they gained time, but they didn't straighten out their problems. So, they then make more promises to straighten out and ask for more loans. And since nobody wants to see the disaster come, they are given more time, another loan. But now it seems they've run out of time. We've all run out of time. And I'm asking, what is the lesson of this? Now, there is a new story here that I'm going to talk about. And it says that Greece's prime minister, struggling to ensure parliamentary approval for a crucial austerity bill, because this is what the Greeks are being asked to do. They're being asked to do something they're not very good at, and even though they're not a wealthy nation or a wealthy people particularly, they're not good at living austerely, because they're used to kind of, well, I can't say what they must be used to splurging on things. Anyway, he said on Wednesday he was going to reshuffle his cabinet and seek a vote of confidence. This would have been last Wednesday for his new government after coalition talks. But as I'm saying, austerity is not in Greek genes. If there's no money anywhere, there's nothing to be done. They do without. But if someone has some, or they can get some, or they can expect to get some, they'll be trying to get it. And that's exactly what they're doing now. They're not wanting to deal with this austerity. And it is very, very harsh, because Europe has been quite prosperous for some time. Europe has been living very well, all Europe. And it has been, like all of us, on borrowed money, on non-existent money, really. But now I'm going to go through something that Time Magazine had an article in their last Friday's edition. I believe that's where I got this. I'm sure I got it on Saturday or so. And they write in Time Magazine, and you know, Time Magazine is certainly a globalist backer, and part of the whole New World Order. And they say, though, in this article, Greece probably should never have been allowed to join the Eurozone in the first place due to its long history of financial irresponsibility. Well, then they say, once in the Union, Greece's politicians took advantage of the stability it brought not to reform or improve competitiveness. Now, this is what I was saying a little just a minute ago. But to amass debt at low rates of interest to fund a bloated and pointless civil service. Meanwhile, the rest of Europe turned a blind eye, lacking the political will to follow the very rules they designed to prevent emerging crises the Greeks were in the process of creating. So, you know, it's true that this problem was really expected by everyone, and you see, it was seen what was going on, but nobody had the will to do anything about it, because when you're all equal, it's very hard to say, well, now we're gonna go after you, you know. We're going to go after you, Greece, because you know, they're all supposed to be responsible, and what I'm saying is, you have to give them their dignity. You have to, if they say, oh, we're going to change, we've got a plan, we're going to do better, they feel that they must accept that. But on the other hand, there's also the banks, you know, that if somebody defaults, a lot of people are going to lose money. And they put off these defaults because they don't want the banks to fail. And then if a bank fails, it could have unforeseen consequences, you know, going on down the line. And so this is another reason that they don't want to allow anyone to default, particularly a whole nation that's in the European Union. But the Time magazine is making this point that Greece should never have been allowed to join in the first place because they have a long history of financial irresponsibility. So that's the key thing here that we have to ask about how much do we extend the idea of European? And I certainly think Greece is European, but they're just a different, all Europeans are not created equal, as I said. All right, Time magazine goes ahead. The road ahead is pockmarked with feeble economic prospects. This is for Greece, you know, in their austerity or whatever they do. You know, they have no other choice now. Whether they default or they get another loan, the road ahead is pockmarked with feeble economic prospects, joblessness, deteriorating government services, and a lower standard of living. There is little beyond venting their anger on the streets that the Greeks can do about it. Whatever happens as the crisis unfolds, whether Athens defaults or not, whether the country sticks with the euro or ditches it, years of painful reform and austerity measures to straighten out the nation's finances are unavoidable. Well, my comment is, don't sympathize with those whose nature is to be irresponsible, to enjoy the day and not worry about tomorrow. Of course, you know, I'm the German type, so I'm like the Germans. I'm a little fed up with this stuff. But they, you know, they will always suffer for it, and that's what the Greek people do. They don't like to work too much. They're great fighters, though. They're great fighters to protect their independence. They're fiercely independent. Well, I say, let them be independent. But because my hope for this is that, and I think it's not going to work out this way at all, but it would be that they don't get another bailout, and that they do default on the money. The money doesn't get paid back. They're out of the union, and they're now go back to their drachma, I think it is. And then this maybe starts a movement of others who should be doing the same and see what happens here. But there's tremendous fear about what will happen if this starts coming apart. Now, Time magazine says in this here that we're all going to be experiencing lower living standards soon. See, now here's where they get their thing in. First, they're saying that Greece is on the way to these lower living standards. There's no way out of it. Deteriorating government services, blah, blah, joblessness. And now they say, well, we're all going to be experiencing this soon because of necessary budget cuts. It's the price of living beyond our means, like the Greeks have done. Yeah, our governments have been living beyond their means. those painful adjustments will have to be made as the West confronts a challenge to its dominance and competitiveness from a rising East. Well, I wonder if that is inevitable, or if this is part of the plan, and now we're all being told how this lower living standards and painful adjustments of doing with less is in our future, and there's nothing we can do about it. We just accept it, make the best of it, as though it's a temporary thing, but it doesn't sound very temporary. So I'm saying that time is also setting us up here. And so once again, I may be naive and foolish, but let the system implode. I'm not worried about disaster. Maybe I should be. I've never lived through disaster, so I mean, I don't know what I'm, you know, what I'm facing, but I don't think there's a way to avoid it. One way or another, it's coming, whether you put it off, you let it happen now. And I've always been in agreement with those who say, let things fail, and then it'll all be over with, and then we can start building something better, rather than continuing to try to hold on to what is and put it off, and get worse and worse. Because when this disaster comes, because we have put it off so long, it's going to be huge. But then that would be the only thing that would really maybe destroy this whole system, which needs to be destroyed. But anyway, so that's what I say. Don't bail out Greece. Let the giants fall, the banks, and don't let them ever come back. Return to national banks, national currencies, national golds. I agree that's easier said than done. And yet this is where we have to be a strong, tough people, and we need to have strong, tough leaders. And I don't think we're quite prepared, but you never know how people will come through, because there are a lot of people who are kind of ready, pretty ready, and a lot more than I know of. So anyway, I'm saying that we want to also return to inequality among the world's nations. Let's recognize that we're not all equal, that this is not a world full of equal peoples, and that some people are way superior in certain areas over others, and everybody's got their areas where they're good, and they should take pride in themselves. Everybody matters, but everybody's not the same. Now if we had that also, and I'm saying here, in the case of the Germans and the Greeks, let the Germans take care of the Germans, and let the Greeks take care of the Greeks. Don't be taking care of other people. Now, the Europeans can be united as much as they are able to, but they can't be responsible for one another, because as I already pointed out, these huge differences between us. So you can't expect someone to be taking care of another ethnic group that behaves so differently and can't share what their values and their way of life. And if you're people who work hard and save, you can't be expected to take care of people who don't look at life that way. Now, the Time article ends with, centuries ago, Greece was the leading light of Western civilization. Now Greece may be leading the way towards the decline of that civilization. Well, here I say they're trying to tell us that today's Greeks are the same as the Greeks of centuries ago, and I don't believe that. There was a racial change in the Greek nation, more than in some others. Today's Greeks are, some of them are just like the Greeks that were pretty much back then, but mostly they're not, and that's why it's not the same nation. And Greece was a fantastic place and a fantastic people, but it's a different people now. And so if we want to say, I don't like this, this is a part of this thing that time is trying to do, saying that, well, Greece is not, Greece used to be the leader of Western civilization. Now, now Greece is leading the way toward decline. And what they're saying is Western civilization is in decline. And I'm saying that Greece is not representative of Western civilization or what it was then. So we shouldn't be falling for this kind of thinking. And this is what they're pushing everywhere, that we are in decline. We are in decline. Western civilization is in decline. The East is rising up, and we just have to make the best of it. Not true. Different people, different results. I think I already made that point. We can't expect the same behavior from all European nations. I made that point. Okay, so I play the game. We play this game. This is a game we're playing when we in egalitarianism. Anything you can do, I can do also. And this is not true among us. Well, all right, we're going to our news break, and I'll be back with more of this. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. Stay with me.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
NATO has admitted that civilians were killed in an airstrike on a Tripoli suburb on Sunday. Gaddafi officials say two babies were among the nine dead. It's the first time the alliance has conceded responsibility for civilian deaths, although Libya's health ministry claims more than 800 people have died in 3 months of air attacks. Maria Fanoshina reports now from the capital, Tripoli. You may find some of the images disturbing.
Mohammed al-Harari's extended family used to be one of the biggest in the neighborhood. A NATO bombing killed five of them. His father, one of his brothers, his sister and her own family. Mohammed shows us the picture of little Jumana, his niece, taken on his mobile phone just days before he pulled her dead body from under the debris.
I woke up when I heard an explosion. Some stones, a piece of the roof fell on me. I ran immediately to see how my family is, and many were dead. My mother survived. Another brother is in a coma, and we don't know when or if he will recover.
The Al-Hararis are not rich. They've been living in the Sugujima district in Tripoli. It's home to many average income people, most from one family. This is just a regular city quarter, quite densely populated, built-up area. This is what used to be the Al-Hararis house. The two three-story buildings are reduced in ruins in just moments after being hit in a missile strike.
Omar Mohammed's brother, who survived, says they will never forgive or forget what NATO has done to them, destroying their lives and homes.
They should take responsibility for their wrongdoing.
And NATO has responded with an apology.
The intended target during last night's airstrike in Tripoli was a military missile site. However, from our initial assessment of the facts, it appears that one weapon did not strike the intended target due to a weapons systems failure.
Although officials in Tripoli claim more than 800 civilians have died in NATO raids, the nine people they say were killed in Sunday's bombardment of the city have become the first civilian casualties officially acknowledged by the alliance. Only on Saturday, NATO has also admitted another mistaken airstrike, this time on rebel forces near the Libyan oil port of Braga, with a number of casualties not being disclosed.
We hold NATO, we hold Mr. Cameron, Mr. Sarkozy, Mr. Berlusconi, Mr. Obama, morally and legally responsible for the deaths of these innocent children, innocent boys and girls, and innocent fathers and mothers. You cannot justify this attack with any need. This is not a protection of civilians.
Sunday's fatal error occurs amid rising concerns within NATO about its operation in Northern Africa. Only 8 out of its 28 members have joined the mission to protect civilians in Libya.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com. And now here's Carolyn.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I was talking about this game we play, Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Also, which is really that we can't stand to be told that we're not as good as somebody else in something or other. I mean, this is considered to be a no-no. This is bad manners or something. You know, you have to, we have to pretend that we're all equal. And we're doing this, I think, a little bit too much in the what's called the white nationalist movement, or the nationalist movement, or whatever you want to call it. We need to grow, as I said right in the beginning, a tougher skin and understand differences so that we can do a better job of surviving through all this. I'm going to turn to some clever commentary from Bill Bonner. He's been writing about Greece, the Greece crisis all week, and he's a financial writer, actually, but I enjoy reading him, which I actually haven't been reading him for a long time. I used to, but I did read some of his stuff last week, and then I kept reading it because I like what he was saying about Greece. And he really is such a good writer. He's entertaining, and I think that's why his financial advisor business is so successful, because people read him because he's an excellent writer. He makes everything. And every day he writes a column, and it's always interesting, even though he's writing about financial matters. Now, Bonner wrote on June 13th that meanwhile Europe grows more troubled and more troubling. The Greeks want money. The Germans want austerity. And I may be repeating some of the things I said in the first half of this program in the second half, but maybe it needs to be repeated. You know, the Germans can handle austerity better. The Greeks cannot, although Greeks probably are able to live if they don't have much to live on, they can manage to do it. But they will also take to the streets. And I don't know if communism is a concern in Greece, but they do have a fairly strong communist party or parties, I think. So you never know what direction things will go. But I say if nations are unable to manage their affairs, then let them go communist. Who cares? Let them go to the other camp, because they're only going to be a problem. Now, I'm not saying I want that to happen, and of course I hate to say that, considering my Greek friends that I know and like, and I don't want to be insulting them. But here I am worried about the same thing I'm talking about. You see how that goes. Now, the thing is that Germans never take to the streets unless it's some kind of a celebration. They just don't do it, and others will take to the streets at the drop of a hat almost, and others will do it if things get bad enough. So, but Bonner says that it's obvious that Greece cannot work its way through this problem. It would have to increase GDP by 12% a year for 3 decades in order to grow its way out of debt. So how in the world is this new loan going to work? It's not, you know, I think it's just buying time, because they don't know what to do. And that's why it shouldn't be done. So I'm saying don't borrow more money. And he says renege and walk away. And that this is also his opinion. Own up to having erred. Be of good cheer, knowing that the lenders will suffer the losses they deserve. Well, he has no sympathy for the lenders any more than he does for the borrowers. Then he says some things about the United States. The U.S. has become an irresponsible nation. We're no longer a responsible nation. We're not even a nation. We're something that's going haywire real quick, and led by I don't know what, crooks and criminals and incompetence. But the a report from London says the United States is providing hundreds of millions of dollars of foreign aid to some of the world's richest countries, while at the same time borrowing billions back. And this is a report that was seen by Congress. The Congressional Research Service released this report last month, which shows that In 2010, the U.S. handed out a total of $1.4 billion to 16 foreign countries that held at least $10 billion in treasury securities. I mean, for example, we give foreign aid to China, to Brazil, to Russia, to Mexico, and Egypt. And not as much as we give to some other peoples, but we give them. And these are rich countries compared to us, really. And they hold, they all hold U.S. Treasury bonds worth much more, meaning that if they hold our bonds, we owe them, but we're giving out this money to them. However, I think this is so we can expect them to carry out our wishes relating to certain interests of ours. It's a kind of bribery, and that's what I think much of our foreign aid, most of our foreign aid is. It's not because these people are need anything. It's because we give them this in exchange for promises that they'll do this or that in our interest. Now, you know, we know that Greece has been bailed out once, and it's mainly it's the Germans who mainly pay this because they're one of the most solvent in the European Union. But the French too, after the Germans, the French, and then there are some others who share it. And now it's needing a second bailout. So he said, Bonner says, basically Greece is a car crash waiting to happen. And it is. It's going to crash. None of this is going to work because it's too far gone. And there's many other things that are going to crash. But right now, one thing that people like about it is that if they have Greek bonds, right now a 10-year bond is paying 17% interest. And now that may have changed since this was written, because it fluctuates. But he says, Bonner says, this is because you can't trust the Greeks to make good on the money. He's very tough on things. But it's true, you know, I'm sure you know, the more risky bonds are, the higher the interest rate they have to pay. And a two-year, I have below that a two-year bond as of Friday was paying 30% interest. Now, you know, anybody who knows that they're going to bail out Greece again, if they are, then they could be, you know, buying these bonds. Hopefully they may have trouble selling them though, because they make a lot of money. But, you know, I won't be a creditor anymore because people don't want to pay back anything. I mean, it's really difficult in today's world. It's gotten to be so bad that you can't trust anyone to pay back the money. And so you can really lose a lot when you loan money. But that's the only way to make any money today, but you just have to do without it. Now the chief economist, chief economist at the bank Saudi Francie, who has a Greek name, Bonner says, writes that the Greek political landscape is ingrained with vested interests, endemic kleptocracy, and bribery. So all these claims by the Greeks that, oh, they've been, you know, they haven't done anything wrong and they're being picked on and, you know, that's not true. They have a very sick government in society and they haven't been responsible. And they behave like a second or third world country in the way of this using bribery and theft. And Bonner writes, unemployment is around 20%. People dodge taxes. Government workers don't show up for work. Households spend too much. And the government is going into debt so deeply and so rapidly, it can't possibly get out. Now, he says, everybody knows that Greece always defaults on its debt. It's been in default one way or another, for half its life, ever since it gained independence in 1828. Well, did you know that? Therefore, that's predictable Greek behavior, a known fact, and yet Greece was brought into the European Union and expected to follow the rules like everyone else. Well, you could see, you know, if anybody's using any sense or really wanting something that's going to work successfully, then, you know, you would never do some of these things. So we have to ask ourselves, I don't think it's all conspiracy either. I think it's based on the fact that they want to be big. They want everybody on their side. They don't want them to go into some other kind of alliance with someone else. And this is what Europe wanted. It wanted to include everyone. But it's not working. All right, an interesting story of Bonner and his trip to Belarus. Now, Belarus is another country. It's not in the European Union, but it's another country that has the same kind of problems, maybe worse. And he had this, he's telling this story from the early 90s. So this was shortly after the fall of the Soviet Union and Belarus had become an independent nation, had declared its independence. And now it was, it asked some of these financial people from the U.S. to come and give them some advice. And he was among them. So he said he went there and he says, "What a dreary and depressing country. We stayed at the best hotel in Minsk, a tattered high rise that looked like a welfare tenement in Baltimore. But there was no running water in our room, so the manager moved us to a lower floor. He explained, the water sometimes has trouble getting to the sixth floor. In our meeting with Belarus officials, we found a language barrier that no interpreter could get over. We sat around a huge table and looked at each other. And what could we say? They were just coming out of the Soviet era. They had no idea what to do or how to do it. They didn't understand us. We didn't understand them. So they gave the advice, liberalize and privatize and get yourself a real currency and some decent pumps." That was that's a joke referring to the water not making it to the sixth floor. And he says their response was, forget it. Led by Mr. Lukashenko, the ex-Soviets stole everything they could get their hands on, cheated on elections, and put their opponents in jail or killed them. Of course, this was not a smart way to run an economy. So the country remains as much a disaster area as it was before we got there. That means, meaning it's still a disaster. Belarus got a $3.5 billion loan in 2009-2010, and now they're back asking for more. So there you go. Now, they probably got the loan from the IMF, International Monetary Fund, I would assume. But, you know, they get these loans, and we're, this whole system is constantly loaning out money to create money out of credit. And then we have all this debt, and it's a problem. So Bonner says, our advice, tell them to drop dead. Because they're back for another loan, tell them to drop dead. I agree. This all should stop. This whole system needs to stop. And the only way it's going to stop is if all these countries just fold up because they don't know how to run themselves. Back to the European situation. Greece, he says Greece has just been downgraded. Default appears unavoidable. Well, I don't know. They're talking about giving another loan. Who is the Greek's major creditor, he asked? The European Central Bank. As at the end of the first quarter, Greece had borrowed 90 billion euros from the European Central Bank. And the European Central Bank has 5.3 billion in capital. So they have 5.3 billion in capital. And they've loaned out $90 billion to Greece, but that's, you know, that's over a period of time. But still, you know, they're loaning out money way more than they have. So this is not even, well, this is why nobody's solvent. This is why it's all just a big game. So then he says it gets worse. The Europeans have used European Central Bank as a small town uses a landfill. Everything gets dumped there. In addition to the Greek debt, European Central Bank holds dubious paper from 17 member central banks, totaling some 1.9 trillion of assets. Against this assets, they lend to Ireland, Portugal, Spain, and other needy states, taking their paper in return. So it's all paper. If the debtors don't make their payments, the ECB's assets lose their value and the ECB will go broke. Well, yes. Now, he says, in July, Greece will need more money. Well, that's what's coming up now. Disaster is just around the corner, but disaster is what we need because disaster will accurately reflect our situation with no more denial. That's my comment. Now, today, update today, he says the Europe could fairly easily solve its problem. Greece doesn't really matter to anyone, not even to the Greeks. It could be cut loose. abandoned, allowed to go broke, as we predicted it would a couple years ago. The problem is that banks will go under, leading to a layman moment wherein the whole banking system goes bust, and it could happen, and then we would be in a Great Depression. Well, if it has to happen eventually, we might as well let it happen rather than world improvers and world remakers that constantly want to remake the world, including the Europeans who put together this European Union, and it hasn't worked because they were too ambitious and tried to make it too big. So now let me tell you what Adolf Hitler had in mind for Europe. Adolf Hitler wanted some kind of type of European Union, and he talked about it. And in fact, he talked about it, it's in one of the articles that Wilhelm Mann and I translated from Giesler's book, Ein Anderer Hitler, and it's one of the Barnes Review issues with these translations in them. And he was talking about it then, and what he envisioned was a union of an inner and an outer, an inner core and an outer, so to speak. And the inner core would be the Germanic nations. The two nations would not be, that are often considered European, would not be a part of this. Britain and Russia. This would be only continental Europe, and the Germanic nations would be the core, and they would run it more. And then the rest of them would also be members of this union, but they wouldn't be a part of the core. And seemingly what he had in mind sounds like it would work, considering what we've learned through all this time about how these nations are operating, what they're capable of. That would have been a very workable European Union. But instead, we have this one based on equality or egalitarianism. Let me just add a little story here about America, because we're not doing well either. And Bonner has a little thing: America's Greece, maybe California. Now, we all know who lives in California and how the makeup of California has changed. So at one time, California was such a strong place and would still be if the makeup of the population hadn't changed. So it's really all about the people, the population, the quality or the character and of the people. And that depends on the culture going way back, what they've learned. It doesn't mean that they are a less valuable people. It means they are different, and if you try to stick people who can't fit into a system and that works the way that our systems work, our European systems work, it just causes a crisis. So California is nearing fiscal crisis. This is from the Financial Times. Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a budget saying it wouldn't do the job. Well, it probably wouldn't. But now people are wringing their hands and everyone is worried. But Bonner says, except us, in his firm there, if California can't pass a budget, the police won't get paid, say the worriers. And he says, so what? Private citizens have plenty of guns in California. The crime rate will probably go down. I think that's cute. It's true. There's the police are so bad. If we didn't have the police, then people would be allowed to defend themselves and use their guns. And if people started using their guns on people who came after them, well, we'd get rid of a lot of problem people, and the crime rate would go down, and a lot of people would be gone, and we'd have some real good shootouts. I'm ready for this kind of thing. Not that I'm going to be in one, but then he says the warriors say, well, what about the teachers? They won't get paid, And he says, don't make us laugh. Besides, it's summertime for a vacation, but really the teachers. I mean, talk about people we don't need. They're just babysitters, and if there's no teachers, then these kids will have to do something better with their time than causing havoc in school. and the others can learn on their own. I mean, lots of things could happen. People could be taught more properly when they're not in these public schools. And so if we didn't have to pay all these police, they didn't have to pay all those teachers, well, they might not be in this fiscal crisis. Then the people say, well, what about people on welfare? Ha! Now, he says, don't expect us to cry for the zombies. There must be something. Then the people say, well, there must be something in the state that the state does that is essential. He says, name one thing. Well, I like that. But there we have it. It's the people, as I just already said. I got ahead of myself and already said this. It's the people that make all the difference. It's not the system you use. Now, Mark Weber, in one of his early programs on the Constitution, he made that point, and I agreed with him. I like that very much. He said, no matter what kind of Constitution you have, it's not the quality of your Constitution or even of your laws. It's the people who are living under it or obeying or not obeying the laws or whatever. And that is so true, and this really sums up what I'm saying. We have to think in terms of the people, and not all people who are in what is known as Europe are the same, and we don't all behave the same, and we need to keep that in mind. And I think that's a part of the nationalism that I'm always promoting. So there's another story I'd like to mention real quickly, and I think I just have time to do it. And it is about a Mexican-American study program in Arizona. And it's giving us the same message here, that in Arizona, in Tucson, they instituted a Mexican-American studies program. And the statewide education superintendent learned about this. You know, of course, he has to know about all these things. And he said that this studies program violates the state law, and that promotes that you can't promote the overthrow of the U.S. government, promote resentment toward a race or class of people, classes that are designed primarily for one ethnic group, or advocate ethnic solidarity. But the Tucson school district does not want to lose their program because they like it. I guess they have a lot of Hispanic students. And this is a program that is geared toward Hispanic students. And in the course materials, some of them reference white people as oppressors and stress Hispanic unity. And 90% of the students enrolled in the courses are Hispanic. And Olivia Payne, an African-American student, told CNN that she says these classes are making a difference, and she doesn't want the class to be taken away. Well, they all love the class, but, you know, it is promoting Spanish or Mexican solidarity. Really, and it's not good for us as a nation to have this kind of thing going on. And this is a problem that we all know that we have. And they are keeping these kids in school. They say, well, this program helps the dropout rate. A lot of these kids, less kids are dropping out because they like this kind of school program. Well, if you have to keep kids in school by teaching them how great their Mexican national culture is, and how the white people are oppressing them and things like that, this does not belong. So this is really also, for me, reinforces the difference between racial groups, because they need different curriculums. And this argues against not only a unified nation, but a unified school district. Because if you have to teach different courses and different things to these different racial groups in the United States, you're never going to have a unified nation. And we don't have a unified nation anymore here. I just don't know even what to call the United States of America. In fact, I understand it's not even the United States of America. It has become, it's just the United States. The America got lost somewhere along the line. Now, yet, this gets so bad that 11 teachers and the director of the Mexican-American Studies Department is suing the state of Arizona over this, saying they have to not have, you know, kicking out this this special school studies, Mexican studies program they have. And so here we have now, we've got lawsuits going. And this is the result of mixing people together who don't mix well. And that is my program for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening, and we'll come back next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.